by the Office of Administrative Hearings upon the request of the Public Service Commission to serve as a hearing officer for this hearing. This is the hearing regarding lifting an ex parte cease and desist order of the Public Service Commission on Earth Harvest Mills of Harvey, North Dakota, regarding grain buying activities in North Dakota. This is North Dakota Public Service Commission case number GE-13-099. Before proceeding with the hearing, I'll ask the commissioners if they have any comments or any directions for the hearings. Chairman Calk.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just thank everyone for being here today. Grayson, appreciate you driving down. We've visited a lot over this the last few years, and today this is a formal hearing. And that's the big thing today, is that we'll be asking questions. It'll be part of an official record. There'll be exhibits that will be entered into the future file. Just thank everyone for their work, and I look forward to a probably a very efficient hearing today. Thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchak.
I have no comments.
Commissioner Chrisman.
Mr. Chairman, and Your Honor, no comments for me at this time either.
The record will show that it's a little past 1:30 p.m., April 10th, 2013, at the Commission Hearing Room, 12th Floor, Capitol Building, Bismarck, North Dakota, which is the time, date, and place set by the Notice of Filing and Notice of Hearing issued by the Public Service Commission on March 27, 2013. The Commission's Notice of Filing and Notice of Hearing for this hearing specified the issue to be considered and determined as whether the Commission should lift the cease and desist order. Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco, please state your appearance for the record.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, General Counsel with the Public Service Commission, representing the Public Service Commission.
And will there be any Commission staff who will participate in the hearing?
Not that I anticipate at this time. I mean, not testifying. And I don't anticipate anyone asking questions, but if something comes up, I may ask for permission to do that.
And there doesn't appear to be anyone else present in the room who doesn't represent either Earth Harvest Mills or the Commission who is going to participate. Mr. Hoberg, would you please state your appearance for the record?
Grayson Hoberg.
And who are you representing?
Earth Harvest Mills.
Okay, and I guess you wanted to offer a couple of exhibits before we get started?
Yes, sir. With your permission, two exhibits that Mr. Hoberg has seen and agrees to, and that we have just marked. Exhibit one is the spreadsheet that originally Mr. Hoberg sent to us. Staff added the final column on the far right, sent it back, and Mr. Hoberg agreed with that final column. And that is the farmer debt payments and balance owed. And I would ask Mr. Hoberg, as of what date, if you recall?
Before we do that, let me swear Mr. Hoberg in.
Okay.
Mr. Hoberg, I'm required by law to advise you of the law in this state regarding perjury. Perjury is a false statement under oath of a material fact made by a person who knows or does not believe the statement to be true at the time it is made. Perjury is a Class C felony. A Class C felony is subject to a maximum penalty of 5 years imprisonment, a fine of $5,000, or both may be imposed. Having been advised of the penalty for perjury, please raise your right hand so I can administer the oath. Do you promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Thank you. Okay.
And if I may, and I will ask you if I believe it's as of March 25, 2012, if that sounds...
March what?
25.
I thought it was...
Yeah, 2013. Yeah.
I thought it was earlier in the month, wasn't it? Like 13th or 14th of the month?
This is the second one you sent us.
What was the date of that?
March 25th.
Okay, then it's March 25th. I thought I put the date on this thing, and I don't see it, so.
No, but yeah. The email is March.
Yeah, the date of the email is the date it was done.
Okay, so that's Exhibit 1, and Exhibit 2 is three pages, three deferred payment contracts signed by Roy Bruin on behalf of Rowlin Seeds or Rowlin Holt. There's some different entities identified, which is really not at issue in this proceeding right now, but they are the sort of Rowlin Seeds / Roy Bruin three deferred payment contracts. And I believe that Mr. Hoberg has seen those and agrees both of these exhibits can be entered into the record.
Absolutely, yes.
Mr. Hoberg, there's a stipulation then to the exhibits. Okay. The exhibits will be received, Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 2.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, Mr. Hoberg, you Do you have anything else that you want to present at this time?
Not at this time.
Mr. Hoberg, you may proceed with your case.
All right. This is what I'd like to do is ask for permission to, or hopefully we can raise the cease and desist, make that go away, or at least let us do toll milling. There's a I have my reasons for wanting that. Number one, I don't see the value in the cease and desist in this particular case. January to February, as Exhibit 1 shows, we were making payments to the farmers, January and February. Since this was done and since basically the middle of March, we have not made any additional payments to farmers because we have no cash flow to do it.
Mr. Hoberg, is your mic on? I can't.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
I'll move closer. Sorry about that. So since about the middle of March or beginning of March, we have not made any additional payments to the farmers because there's no cash flow to do it. Right now we're operating with just the gluten-free side of the facility. We're not doing any gluten processing, any wheat processing there. And that has reduced our revenues and our cash flow to the point where we're just doing operations. I can't make any historical debt payments, so I can't make any payments to the farmers. So it's not doing the farmers any good. The other reason is, as I've told you in the past, I've got two investors. They've got a competing bid for putting in money, which is going to the banks, getting approved by the banks and rural development, USDA rural development. And both of them have expressed, and I was just on the phone with one of them about 15 minutes before this thing started, they both expressed concern over making the investment if that piece of the business goes away. And if they do get the business, the bids they did submit to the banks to do this will probably get reduced significantly, if not in half. So there's a risk of losing the investment money, which would also, you know, jeopardizes any payments getting out to farmers too. The other thing I wanted to point out about flour mills, in 2007, 2008, within a year and a half, 2 years of that, I was down at a meeting in Valley City, I believe it was, maybe Jamestown, for an organic meeting, and Susan Richter was at that meeting. And there were organic farmers there, and they complained that they weren't getting paid by the North Dakota State Mill for 6 to 9 months. And Susan said, we can't do anything about that. And shortly after that, in 2008, North Dakota Mill had a $12 million loss in a three-month period, one quarter. Now North Dakota Mill is, you know, $8 million, $13 million profit per year. They're doing great. Like any business, you take the internet business, you take the milling business, you take, as in the internet cable TV business, there are periods in the company's history where something's not working or the economy is going south and you're losing a lot of money. That doesn't mean they're down and out necessarily. Companies can recover from that. Some companies don't, and you know, but there's other companies that do and they put the effort to do it. In the situation with the North Dakota Mill, technically, probably, the Public Service Commission should have told the North Dakota Mill, cease and desist, you can't buy grain until you pay all these farmers. Luckily, they got a pot of gold called the state fund here, and they can raid that. But, you know, companies like myself, they don't have that. Cutting off the grain, whether it to be a state mill, the Minot Mill, us, has a significant impact on moving forward, doing business, paying farmers, paying additional debt. And I just don't see where it works. And even over the last 8 years or so of coming here and talking to Public Service Commission and meeting with them, I've had a couple of one commissioner for sure, state, and a couple, and staff occasionally say that, you know, they don't see where the flour mill should be underneath the Public Service Commission. The laws don't really fit a flour mill that well. It probably works just fine for an elevator, but for a flour mill, it doesn't. And I know you guys are not in charge of setting law or anything. You're in charge of seeing it implemented and in going forward. But I think there's some issues out there with, you know, how the cynical business of a flour mill is and the ups and downs sometimes, and it just doesn't always work that well with a flour mill. If I would As I pointed out, I think February, if I could continue for March probably, if I could continue forward with the full business, gluten and gluten-free, by this summer I would have pretty much, I think, all the farmers paid off except for Roland Seeds on the historical debt. At this present point, there's no payments going to them. So mine is more of a verbal, textual type thing of, you know, the risk to the business is high by not processing the wheat. The risk to the farmer is high because I won't be able to pay them unless I can do the wheat or get the equity in. And the equity, they're getting nervous because I can't do the wheat. So, you know, at a minimum, I would like to see the state allow me at least do toll milling. And that would help. I could structure it then where some of the customers are then paying for the grain to the farmer directly that comes in, and at least get that going and salvage the equity side. I would not be able to make any payments to the farmers in the meantime because I'm not taking any of that commission. I'm not getting any of that dollars coming in, but it would help. It would help salvage the company. That's about all I have. It's very simple.
Okay, any questions for Mr. Hobart? Ms. Jeffcoat-Sacco.
Yeah, we do have a few questions. When do you anticipate having sufficient funds to convert all the outstanding grain accounts? You mentioned a little bit about summer, but can you pinpoint when you think you could have the funds to convert all grain accounts, bring everything into compliance?
If I could be running both sides of the facility wide open, it's probably 6 months to 7 months I could convert all but Roland Seeds. That's not too realistic now. In my view, you know, my hopes are, my best case scenario to walk out of here today is, you know, if I could toll mill. The next scenario is equity. And from an equity partners coming in, what I've heard from the banks and rural development is that by the first week in May, they will be able to go back to one or both these investors and say, we will accept a deal like X. And hopefully that's a 1 or 2 week long negotiating period. But I'm a little hand tied on that. I've called our senators and our representative in Washington to ask them if they could expedite everything, because 2 weeks ago when I was in a meeting, they told me that it would take 60 to 90 days to get the rural development side of it done. And last Friday, rural development said it'll take them 2 weeks now. So helps to make a phone call.
I don't know if we got an answer to your question, Alana, though.
Well, I got the you can't pin it down. What I heard, can't pin it down if it isn't fully lifted. Is that an accurate summary? You can't pin down.
If we didn't have investors in there, if it was fully lifted, it would take me 6 to 8 months to get it taken care of if I was doing everything. If on the investment side of it, I'm hoping that will be wrapped up by mid-May, end of May.
And is that sufficient equity, though, to pay everybody?
That's what I don't know. They're getting nervous. And I've expressed that opinion to the bankers yesterday, that I've got both investors are saying without the gluten side, they're getting nervous about doing it even. And the pricing is going to definitely go down, in which case I don't know what the banks and rural development will say. So there's starting to get to be too many variables in this thing, just because I can't do the wheat is the biggest cause of it.
And the pricing of what will go down, I'm not a farmer or a miller, so you got to get me the fourth grade explanation. Pricing of which part of this is going down?
What we're doing, for the last 9 months, I've talked to roughly 14 different investors about putting money equity in the company, and we've got a great company, great growth, and for one reason or another, some good reasons, some bad reasons, some of them just couldn't get it done, timing-wise, health-wise, or whatever. And some just look at our balance sheet and say, we can't do it. The last two here have come in and said, we will put money in the company, actually will take over the company and restart it. But in doing so, we're going to request that the banks and rural development write off a large portion of their debt. And if we wipe out X amount of debt from the banks and the rural development, then we will fund the company and we will put money in the company to take it forward, have operating capital, payments to some, probably all vendors. I'm still trying to nail down exactly what they're talking about doing. But I know with one vendor, his plan is to pay off all the farmers. The other vendor, the one investor, his plan is to pay off all the farmers. The other investor, I just can't nail him down on that.
Let's talk for a minute about that Exhibit 1. Are there changes between March 25 and today to any of the numbers?
I don't believe so. I don't think we've made any payments since then to any of the farmers.
Okay. That was going to be my next question, but no changes, no payment.
Right.
If you look at that column with those due dates on the far right for
right.
the contracts, have you talked to any of those farmers?
I've talked to some.
About a new contract with a date that's not overdue.
I haven't talked about writing a new contract. I've talked to them about here's where I'm at with these investors. I've told them that Earth Harvest Mills looks like it's going to get bought out and we'll have a new name. And we'll be operating under a new company, new owners. And the timing is probably mid-May. And I haven't talked to all of these, but I've talked to some.
Could we look for a moment at the John and Amy Kavalin
yep.
line? Okay, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Do you have a deferred payment contract from Kavalin's?
I'm fairly certain I do. Why, don't you have one in your office?
I would have to defer and ask Sue Richter, who may have to take an oath to answer that question. I'm assuming that since the question's here.
If I highlight yellow, then I've got it, but I would have to go back. I thought all the ones we have there, we should have emailed them down or faxed them down here so you have them. So I will double check that, but I'm like 95% certain I've got one.
I think at the end, perhaps we'll ask Sue to explain that particular issue. We'll put her on the stand, let her explain it, rather than me trying to reinvent it. Who is Roy Bruin?
Roy Bruin is a farmer in Alberta, Canada. Farms 40,000 acres of organic cropland and 20,000 acres of organic pasture land.
And what is his relationship to Rowland Seeds, or Roland Seeds,
I think
it is how. I'd like to simply note that the Rowland Seeds and the Roy Bruin contracts are Exhibit 2, and there are... I'm just going to kind of go over this very quickly. There are three separate contracts. Is that correct?
Correct.
And the amounts and the names on the contracts are what? Why don't you refer to those and tell me what the three contracts are?
There's from the front to the back, Roy Bruin Holdings, which I'm not sure what entity. I think that's his U.S. holding that he has. He has facilities in the United States and Montana. Roy Bruin Personal, and then Roland Seeds, which is the entity in Canada. And The mounts are from the front to the back, 173,000, 350, and 350,000.
And that adds up to what? Do you know?
873,387.
Okay. Did you issue scale, or did Earth Harvest Mills issue scale tickets for grain received totaling 873,387?
We buy probably $2 million, $4 million worth of grain from them every year. So, yes, we've issued more than enough scale tickets to cover this, but if you look at the Exhibit 1, what our books show that we owe them is $578,000.
Okay.
And what Roy's books show us owing him is about $630,000, if I recall.
But neither one of those numbers is 873,387. Why not?
I would say on the back two of these here, I spent probably 12 months trying to get them to sign a deferred payment agreement. And it's basically an insurance policy, you know, for them. And that's I'm required to by the Public Service Commission. And he absolutely, absolutely refused to do it because there were three things we were working on. And we were working on getting a deferred payment contract signed. We were working on the contract for the grain we're buying from him. And he's also looking at converting a large portion, if not all of his debt, into equity in the company. And he wanted all three of those settled and put to bed before he would do any one of them. And I went out to meet with Roy 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, on a weekend, and took these with, and I said he is going to sign these two pages before I drive back to North Dakota, and we spent 3 or 4 hours on these documents, and he said he won't do it unless he adds in some more money in this thing, and I said, fine, you know, the Public Service Commission is going to force you to have come up with grain receipts and everything else, so it doesn't, you know, this is not what I owe him. This is not what is owed to him. And I made it very clear to him that he's not going to get, you know, it's not like the Public Service Commission is going to sit here and write a check for $873,000 to him. They're going to go through every grain receipt and say what it is, and this is the only way I can get him to sign it. I just flat out couldn't get him to sign a deferred payment agreement. I've spent 12 months working on it, and that's the best I could do.
I want to ask you about something in the beginning of that answer where you said the Public Service Commission required you to have them required you to have the contracts.
Yep.
Is it correct that the Public Service Commission staff continues to require you to convert
exactly
the unpaid
convert to cash or a deferred payment
credit
agreement.
Sale.
Exactly. That's the right way to word it.
Thank you.
Yep.
I don't know that we have any further questions at this time.
Any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Cock?
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you, Grayson, for your discussion with Alana. Follow up on what Alana just said. I'm a little confused here about, can you sign contracts saying you're willing to pay this individual, $873,000? So and you told us a little bit ago you're willing to make right all these bills you owe here in a few months. So you have to pay this person $873,000 because you've signed a contract to pay them that much.
We owe them, in our books, we owe them $578,000. That's all we owe them.
I'm not an attorney, but there's three pieces of paper here that say that you agreed to pay this person this amount of money. I'm just saying that's just the way I read this.
In the way my discussion with Roy and my understanding and Roy's understanding is this is strictly and basically an insurance policy from the Public Service Commission. This is not a contract for what I owe him.
Well, I just wanted to get my question on the record, too.
Yep.
That's the way I see this.
Yeah, neither of us see it that way.
That is the way I see this.
Yeah, I understand. Sorry.
The Exhibit 1, tell me about the discussion that you've had or with the individuals that, you know, David Hager, the second one down, that in September of 2012 he was owed $4,029, and now in March he's still owed $4,029. What does he think is going on right now?
I think one of the other people in the offices had the conversation with him. I have not personally had that talk to Dave. I haven't, you know, there's a few of us talking to these different people, but, you know, with most of the people I've talked to, I have told them what's going on. And the people Eric's talked to, he's told them what's going on. So, you know, with, you know, for example, with Ray Miller, I just talked to him this morning, and I told him what's going on. I told him that, you know, we are in the process of equity coming in. It'll be a new company, new owners, buying out of the company. But okay. Between now and then, I don't have any cash.
Tell me that. Then the second thing, we'll go down a little bit farther, that Farmers Union Oil of Velva, you owed $8,000 roughly in September of 12, but now they're owed $4,540. How do you pick who gets paid over who doesn't get paid? There doesn't seem to be any reason why, or rhyme or reason that I can determine between who was owed money in 12 to who's been paid. Some, if you get on the bottom, Wendell Lund, they were paid $4,000. Some weren't paid at all. How do you prioritize your payments of those people that you still owe cash money to?
Farmers Union Oil Valve is an easy one because in that particular case, we have two customers, one in Hong Kong and one in Minnesota, that we do conventional wheat to. And we needed a little bit of wheat, so we paid them the old bill and bought some new wheat. And if you notice on that line, it was yellow up until March, and now it's not yellow. We paid off the old deferred payment contract. We don't have a deferred payment contract on the new one. Some of these farmers were paid down on some of the debts so that they would not file with a complaint with the Public Service Commission. They would be a little more patient if they had something. Marv Huber is a good example of that. Marv Huber is like, you need to pay me something. You know, so we paid him $7,000 at one point, then we paid him the remaining $3,000 so that he would not do a complaint. So could get a little more time here to get things straightened out.
Okay. All right, thank you. That was all that I had.
Commissioner Christman?
First of all, regarding the apprehension of investors,
yep,
because of the cease and desist order, I assume have you shown them the motion that we passed or made clear to them that the motion laying out the requirements that are needed here to get things running smoothly were kind of what are holding up the lifting of the cease and desist?
I haven't showed them the motion. I've walked them through the requirements. And because there's two bidders, neither party's willing to put, even if there's one bidder, neither party be willing to put money into the company before a bid's accepted and finalized because of the issues with potential bankruptcy, potential, the minutiae of putting money into an entity before it's closed, especially in a situation like this. So they're not willing to go and pay off the farmers to make, you know, the motion, you know, acceptable. And if the gluten-free, if the organic wheat side goes away or the wheat side goes away and all that's left is the gluten-free side, the question is, what is the value of the company after that? And so I'm kind of stuck in a strange spot here where, you know, I've got two potential investors, but neither of them believe they can put money in per their attorneys, they can't put the money into the company to help get through this hump here with meeting the motion.
I see the Exhibit 1 with the list of accounts payable. How much money is past due to banks?
To the banks?
Other lending institutions?
Let The on the interest and principal, last summer we took $320,000 of interest and put it in deferred interest, which has no time frame for getting paid off and no accumulating interest on it. And then I'm behind by either 5 or 6 months of payments, so roughly $250,000 to $300,000 to the banks. And then
I'm going to interrupt here, Your Honor, for 1 second.
Go ahead.
I want to be sure that Mr. Hoberg understands that if there are questions asked that he considers trade secret, that he can request trade secret protection for the information, and we can close, sever the recording and separate it.
Thank you.
Banking information kind of
okay.
Made me jump to that thought. We had decided before, unless the commissioners asked for it, that the trade secret information we have in our possession we would not introduce unless needed. But the questions, he has a right to ask for that for the questions.
Mr. Hoberg, you're your own watchdog on that. So.
Yeah.
I understand. Thanks.
Okay.
So it's about 250 to 3.
All right.
This was the answer. Okay. And then can you tell me about what it was that was received from USDA Rural Development? My understanding from a Google search was there was one infusion of money and then later another much larger infusion of money. But, it never really says in the paper whether they're grants or loans or what. What is there? And if they're loans, are we behind on payments to them?
Okay, the numbers I just gave you is where I'm behind on payments.
Okay.
The total loans, when we first started this in 2003, they gave us a loan of about $1.2 million, and that comes from the banks, and it's multiple banks. It's not just one bank, and then Rural Development does a guarantee of those loans. So they do, on that particular one, a 75% guarantee. Then we did another loan in 2000. What happened in the company is the company grew extremely fast. We were at 100% capacity in 2007, 2008 through 2009. So in 2008, both the current investors and the bank said, okay, let's do an expansion. And they put another, the bank loans were $7.3 million they put in, which the Rural Development guaranteed 70% of that. And then in end of 2009 and 10, the economy hit us hard, like a lot of other people, and we got hit real hard. But so the total with the total loans out there that are with the banks are with the amount past due is about $9.8 million. And the issue of that $7,580,000 is guaranteed by Rural Development, of which the USDA Rural Development in North Dakota can approve up to $7.5 million, and I'm $80,000 over that, so it has to go to Washington. So that's why Senator Hovind and everyone else got involved to help speed things up.
Are you willing to provide us any evidence of what these two potential investors are willing to kick in here and what their expectations are?
I don't think I have it with me. I have, and this would be something that is highly confidential and I could not give it out, but I have a copy of what one of the investors gave the bank as to here's what they want to do, and what they're willing to pay the banks and what their plans are. I have many conference calls with that particular investor on what his thoughts are on vendors, farmers, etc., but nothing concrete written down. I know what his plans are.
But just your general basic knowledge of it, I don't understand the ownership of Earth Harvest Mills, and you know, you come and talk to us, but I'm presuming that there's more, that you probably don't own 100% of of everything. And so if someone is willing to invest significant money here, I presume they want some ownership interest in it. And what gives me certainty moving forward that the rest of your ownership interest is willing to dilute their interest in order to accommodate a new investor's interests?
Like I said, I talked to 14 investors. 12 of them, we were looking at doing a situation where they were going to put in $2 to $5 million, $1.5 to $5 million, and for ownership anywhere from 20% to 50% of the company. And in my discussions with their current shareholders, all of them were okay with those situations, and I had many discussions with them to confirm that. The last two are not investing into the company. They're buying out the bank debt and then either taking the company through a bankruptcy or taking it into a what do you call it? Where you call on the debt. You foreclose, a foreclosure. And in which case, our current shareholders, including myself or anyone else, would have no vote on it because they would buy the bank debt and then say, okay, vendors, shareholders, if you don't agree with what we're planning on doing, you can pay the $9.8 million to us. And then they own the company. So the current shareholders won't get a vote on this topic.
When I look at these Roland contracts, I understand your explanation and I appreciate the situation you're in, trying to do what we're asking and get these outstanding balances converted up against someone who is unwilling to just do what you're needing him to do. However, it appears, you know, I have the same concerns for you as Commissioner Colcad, but while, you know, we've discussed this before, and I feel a responsibility to provide regulatory protection for people who would come and do business at your facility, I also feel a responsibility for the fund that pays the indemnity fund. And this appears to me to be basically an effort to defraud the indemnity fund.
Can I speak to that?
Yes.
The I have from Roy a document that shows what he thinks I owe him. Like I said, he thinks I owe him about $630,000. I have a document that shows that, and it goes through more detail on it. I show in my books I owe him $578,000. We're off by $60,000, roughly, 50-some thousand. Roy and I will figure that out and get that fixed. I made it perfectly clear to Roy, and I told him I'm going to tell Sue this, and I'm 90% certain I told Sue this, that, you know, this is what happened with Roy. This is what he's put this down here. Roy knows he put this down there. Roy knows that this is far and above beyond what we own, and that Roy understands he's going to have to come to the commission. If something goes wrong where you have to pay out in this thing, he's got to come to the commission and go through scales ticket by scale ticket, and he's probably going to pull from our records of what it is. And I've told that, I'm like I said, I'm 90% certain I told Sue this when I got back from the trip, or that was my discussion with him, and you know, that I thought that was the best I could do. I mean, I wish I could have done better, but that was the best I could do. Okay. And I don't think there's his motives, his thoughts, I don't know, but he understood what I was going to tell Sue. He understood what it was. So that's, I don't know what else to tell you.
How many others of these are similar situations where the dollar amount decreased but not by the real value, and we're trying to get extra money out of the indemnity fund?
Okay, that last part of the sentence, I don't think that was Roy's intent. I don't know. But, you know, he would have to answer that one. So I don't want to speculate on that one. The rest of these are for the dollar amount we owed at the time we did it. Now, some of them probably had some portions paid to them since then. So they might be what we owe them is lower than what the deferred payment contract in Sue's office is. But it was not. Roy's a unique individual on how, you know, it's structured with him, so.
Exactly, what's toll milling?
Toll milling is I don't owe the grain. I don't owe the grain at all. A customer A, needs flour from me, and he says, "Grayson, I'll buy the wheat. I want you to toll mill it for 5 cents a pound, 10 cents a pound." And he'll show up with the wheat. He owns the wheat. I run it through the mill. He arranges the trucking to the mill from the mill. And he pays me a fee for milling it, putting it in a bag, and putting it in his truck.
How does us prohibiting you from buying grain via our cease and desist order prohibit you from toll milling?
I don't understand that myself, but last week when I posed this question, you know, as a way to keep moving forward, Leon, you might have to go, this is more of a question for you than me, because there's a law in there where, I don't remember what it is, but can you answer that one?
I think that, and I don't want to be testifying here, I will explain staff's understanding of the licensing law, which is grain received. It's a grain received law. If you receive grain, doesn't matter if you're buying it, storing it, or it's flowing through like all the other processors, the corn ethanol processors, anybody, you've received grain, so it's covered by the license. And I think that commission is probably familiar. We've talked a lot about how much grain moves through a processing plant. Take an ethanol plant. Don't pick on Grayson for this. And whether the bond amount is big enough when you do it on capacity. Capacity is tiny, but the amount that moves through there is huge. So with the way staff looks at it, if the grain comes in to this facility for whatever purpose, owned by Grayson or not, it's subject to the license. That's the understanding of staff to date. And again, we are struggling with whether we should be looking at that differently or not. But that's the status today.
But elevators and ethanol plants, they don't do toll milling for anyone.
I understand. We can talk about that further, but that's the staff's implementation understanding today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
On the toll milling, I do a lot of toll milling all the time. For the last 10 years, I'd say 90-95% of my business is where I buy the grain, I mill it, I sell it. 5-10% of my business is where someone shows up with something that they want to buy, and then I toll mill it for them. So I have no ownership of it. It shows up. And at one point, I don't think we put it on scale tickets, and then we were asked by the Public Service Commission staff to put it on scale tickets so they could see the traffic and even on toll milling stuff. So now we're putting on scale tickets. But we've been toll milling for 10 years, and it's based on customer demand. Sometimes it's based on a unique wheat, like a red millet or a red sorghum or something like that. They want us to do this different. You know, they know we're not going to buy it, and so they're bringing in on their nickel.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Fedorcha.
Grayson, what percent of your business is the gluten-free side?
By weight, it's 2/3 of my business. By revenue, it's 1/3 of my business.
Okay. So is it accurate to conclude that with the cease and desist, you're not allowed to operate 2/3 of the revenue side of your business, generate 2/3 of your revenue?
Well, it's about half my gross margins are gone because of this, of not doing the gluten side of it.
Okay, so how is it that you have no, you stated earlier that you have no cash flow. And so since March 25th or whatever these dates, you've not been able to make any payments on these debts because you have no cash flow.
Right. So the business, the way it's structured is, you know, I've got my revenues and my cost of goods sold. And then I've got all my expenses. So I've got employees, I've got electricity, UPS picking up samples, and et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
On that section where I've got the employees and everyone, there's a cost of having people around there doing things and working on stuff. The gluten side of the business, I can fire that up, and it increases my electrical bill by about $5,000 a month. And it increases my labor by about 3 to 4 people is all. Right now we have close to 40 people. So it contributes about half of the cost of paying all those. Now I don't have that in there. So now I'm in a situation where my income statement is hovering right around zero. It's plus 5 or 10,000 a month, minus 3 or 4,000 a month, depending on you know, March and February. So when I say I have no cash flow, I went from having $60,000 to $100,000 in cash flow per month in January and December to now I've got nothing to pay anyone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we're in a tough spot here because, I mean, as an individual, I'd like your business to be successful. As a public service commissioner, I'm charged with making sure that the farmers who are operating with you are protected. And that's why the cease and desist was issued, because of all this debt, and we didn't want to magnify that by you taking on more grain for more farmers and not paying them. How can we lift the cease and desist with all of this existing and no assurance that you're not going to get further behind?
Well, the one way, like I said, I'm not optimistic on you lifting the cease and desist today. I'm more optimistic on trying to get at least to be able to toll milling, mm-hmm. because then there's no debt at all. If you do lift the cease and desist, then you have something where I have to pay for it immediately if you lift the cease and desist. But otherwise, if you at least allow me to do toll milling, then I can go to the customer and say, you know, here's the situation. You know, what I need to do then is go to these customers and say, okay, customer A, here's the situation I'm in. I've got about another 30 days where I'm in this disaster. Can I toll mill this for you? Can you pay Rolling Seeds or someone? I'll toll mill it for you, and it'll still be the same cost to you, delivered into you or whatever, and so we can get rolling. And that would eliminate the concern of the debt going up in the farmers. It'll allow me to keep the customers happy, and it'll hopefully keep the investors happy because that side of the business is still running.
How much do you think you could generate with toll milling? And how long would it take to get on top of this debt with if you're able to toll mill?
If I were able to toll mill, it should generate about another $60,000 a month in cash flow that I can work with to pay out to different parties.
And that would be available not to pay staff and all that. That
right.
would be money available to
right.
pay debt.
Right.
Farmers.
Because, correct.
A month.
Right.
60 to 70. All right. And would it be feasible for you to even be allowed to take on grain and pay cash? I mean, is that even in your financial situation right now, is that even something that you could commit to?
A month ago, yes. Today, I don't think it's possible. I think the only thing I can pull off right now is a toe milling.
Okay. And I don't know if I'm allowed to ask other questions about toe milling, but have we, but I'm going to, and you can tell me if I can't.
Do whatever.
Okay. Toe milling, we've assumed that that is within our jurisdiction. It seems like there might be some question on whether it is or isn't. And how do we get to the bottom of that?
Oh, question for me?
Whoever knows the answer.
Okay. Okay. We get to the bottom of that by looking at the statute and determining the appropriate interpretation. And staff has been basically using the consistent commission precedent, which is receipt of grain. Now, because even if a couple scenarios have been going through my mind, hypothetical scenarios, as they do every time I talk to Grayson about this. You know, let's say a farmer goes to a different elevator. Let's say it's Annie's wheat, but they buy it from Joe Schmo, and Joe Schmo takes it to a different elevator. Well, when that elevator takes it over to Grayson's, that elevator is protected by the bond. Okay, and elevators are protected by the bond just like farmers. Every situation we've had, if grain comes in to a facility and it's evidenced by the scale ticket, which is step one always when grain comes into any facility, it's been considered an obligation of that bond. As I see this issue, and again, I have been thinking about this from time to time, it's a payment issue, and so it may still have to be considered part of the obligation of the bond or whatever the elevator's obligation is, but perhaps there's a way that the payment, the conversion, so to speak, can be taken care of almost instantaneously so that it never becomes an outstanding obligation that can be risked not being paid. I don't know. I struggle with how to not call it receipt of grain. Perhaps there's a way where conversion happens and there's a guarantee of conversion.
When you explained it to me last week, you also said that the reason it's still underneath my jurisdiction is because customer A says, I want you to toll mill it, and he pays, for example, Roland Seeds. I'm going to pay you X dollars a bushel to bring this in, and then he doesn't pay Roland Seeds. My neck. Nickel.
That's when it would play itself out as an obligation.
If customer A didn't pay the farmer.
And that's why I'm saying that maybe, and we can talk about all these hypotheticals, you know, not in this hearing at a different time, but maybe it's getting that conversion and proof of conversion to turn around very quickly or, like I said, instantaneously, that would be enough of a comfort level to the commission to lift that portion of it.
Right.
And the related question is toll milling of non-grain, of something that's already been processed to some extent or converted to some extent, which we should talk about on the next go-around, if not before.
Okay, so toll milling is still kind of a question mark. My last question, on the gluten-free side, in previous conversations, it seemed like that showed a lot of potential to generate income, revenue, that I was at one point hopeful could help clear some of this up, and then you could have, you know, we could lift the cease and desist, and you'd be good to go. Is that still an accurate read on that side of the business, or how are things looking there?
They're on the gluten-free side, it's looking great. We have a large queue of orders to get out. You know, a year ago we had 25 employees. Now we have 40 employees, and it's primarily because of gluten-free. And they're busy. They're busy. I mean, every now and then we have a week where I've got people there, you know, 24 hours a day packaging and retail and stuff. I mean, so it's going great. But it's not – it's generating great cash and it's growing great, but it's not like in the next 5 days I'll be able to pay enough to take care of the Public Service Commission's request so I can lift the cease and desist. I just, it's doing great, but it's just not going to be fast enough. You know, it's...
You don't see a day in the future where you can get out from under this with the gluten-free side?
By just the gluten-free side? I think the gluten-free side will get there to where it's significantly large enough to do that, but it'll be like later this fall, this winter time frame, not... You know, the way I was explaining to the investor on the drive in here this morning, this at lunchtime here, is the gluten side of the business covers most of my payroll, covers most of my expenses. The gluten free then becomes gravy. That's where, you know, that's all the profits in. So the gluten side is so critical, in my view, it's so critical because it covers my basic operating costs in the business. And the gluten-free right now covers my operating costs, too. So you could look at it either way. I mean, either one of them is both covering the operating costs. So it's I'm missing half the stool, kind of, is the way I look at it. Because they both cover operating costs. But when you throw one away, then I've got just operating costs covering and no profit, no cash flow.
Okay. All right. That's all.
Back to you.
Your Honor, I had one follow-up if I could.
You may.
More, I'm not sure who the exhibit one and two were. Those your exhibits, Alana, that you offered. How are those?
I offered them, but they were stipulated.
Okay, I guess the question for both parties, for you, Alana, and for Grayson, is that it would be nice to get a late exhibit three and four of what you think is owed and what they think is owed. Back to this, we've got a contract. I mean, those numbers seem to be pretty significant going forward. I'd like to get those into the record of what you believe you owe them and what they believe you owe them, to get those on the record in this part of this hearing. We've talked about that. Is that something?
And I had one question about that. Can I ask that one question of him? And
sure,
then
I just like to, yeah, whatever.
Is that okay? Okay. Grayson, on Exhibit 1, the 578,292, is that the number that you think you owe, or your position is that you owe Roland Seeds?
That's what's in our books, yes.
Okay. So that's the first half of what you're asking
for. You don't
need
an Exhibit 3, then, let's say.
But not on that.
Okay.
Now, you may not be the proper person to testify to this because you're not Roland Seeds, but I'm just going to ask you about your understanding, and hopefully there won't be a hearsay objection. Your understanding of the number, the dollar figure that Roland Seeds says you owe them, is that the number that the contracts add up to?
No.
The eight, where is it? I had it written down somewhere.
873.
873, et cetera, et cetera.
Not even close.
Pardon me?
Not even close.
Not even close. Okay, so... we don't have Roland Seeds here to inquire whether they would be willing to submit something formal to show the number they truly believe they think they're owed, as opposed to the number on the contract.
And I wish I'd have brought it with, and that's why I was digging through this, because I thought this was still from when I went to meet with him in Montana, but I have that piece of paper from him of what is owed.
Mr. Hoberg, I guess I have a follow-up question on that. What is your understanding of the amount that Roland thinks that you owe them?
It's roughly $60,000 more than what I have. And that is, there's interest costs in there. There's a rail car, I believe, in there that we think we paid, and they don't think we paid it, and we got to double-check that. There's a couple things like that. It's a little time consuming to figure it out and reconcile the two, but we're close enough to where.
Is that documentation that you could provide to the commission within a certain number of days?
Well, what I could provide is that sheet that shows what Roy thinks I owe.
And I've got that in my office. I thought I had it with me, but I don't.
Well, if you're willing to provide it, because I was going to ask about the 60 versus the 305 also. So that's where the 60 comes from, if you're willing to provide it.
Go ahead. I don't mean to intrude.
No, it's business notes or something.
60 versus 305.
I was going to ask you. You had said the difference was 60,000, but it's 305 based on Exhibits 1 and 2. You just explained the difference, why it's two different numbers.
Yeah.
So would you be willing to provide that document, and what should we call it? Late filed Exhibit 3?
Yes.
Yeah, but I mean, what's the name of it? What is it, Grayson?
I don't know what he had in the title on it, but let's call it Exhibit 3 for right now, and I'll just send it to you, and you can...
Let's just call it Roland Seed's claim of amount owed.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Grayson, I had understood from conversations that even before the cease and desist, you were not building any new grain debt, that the numbers that we had been continually talking with you about was old grain debt. But today, I thought I heard you say that, for example, Farmers Union of Velva, that $4,500 was new debt in the sense it was not, you had paid off the old, and then the $4,500 was new grain debt.
I paid off the $5,800.
Right. If I misspoke, I'm sorry. So that $4,540 is from what time period? When did that grain come in?
In March. Like the beginning of March
just
or like the end of February.
Just recently. I mean, this March.
No, it's April. So it came in like...
end of 2013.
Yeah.
Okay.
Came in like 30, 45 days ago, 30 days ago or something.
Okay. So are any of these other... numbers, any of these other amounts, past due amounts for grain, are they recent? Or are they, is that the only one that represents a recent unpaid purchase of grain?
There would be some grain we received from Roland Seeds probably middle or end of January in that number there.
Anything else?
That would be it that I can think of.
So all the grain that you had been receiving before the cease and desist was, except for the I'm going to call it old grain, represented by these numbers, except Velva and Rowland, was old. I mean, all the grain you were receiving, you were paying for, and it was and converting on time. Do you have a guesstimate of the quantity?
Probably 250,000 a month in wheat that we're buying, roughly.
That's dollars?
Dollars.
And do you have a guesstimate of over what time period? Only because I'm going by memory from our conversations when you, and I don't remember exactly when it was, when you started telling us you were paying.
Yeah, the what we were doing, for example, Roland Seeds, most of it coming from Roland Seeds, we'd give them a check, a post-dated 30-day check is what we did. And so it would arrive there, we'd give him a check, it was dated 30 days later, and he'd cash that 30 days later. And it was I'd like to say it's about $250,000 a month. And that's wheat and spelt.
And what was the second item?
Spelt.
Okay. Did all those checks clear?
There was a couple that bounced, and we resent them and made those good.
So are there any outstanding NSF checks to Rowland right now?
Not NSF. Well, I sent him a bunch of checks on the last loads, and he was not going to send those through, but his banker sent them through last week, and we had to return them.
Okay.
So because he's, and I'd prefer this part not be in the recorded session, what I'm about to say?
I don't know. We don't even need to go there, I don't
okay.
think.
Don't say it.
Okay.
I just wondered if, and you answered my question about the NSF checks, and so let's just pause and see if anybody else really has to go there. Because I have some other questions I need to ask you.
Okay.
And I think you may have answered this in response to Commissioner Fedorchuk, but I'm not 100% sure. I had written it down before that discourse. You are turning around enough cash now to keep up with payroll? Or are you getting behind on payroll?
No, I'm covering payroll, but I'm just like nip and tuck. I'm just right at that cash flow borderline right there. Each stool, each product line does that. And the other one just gives us the extra $60,000, $70,000 a month, up to 100.
Okay. The cash, the remaining unconverted cash mm-hmm. tickets represented on the list, except for Velva, which is recent.
Right.
Did you contact those people about conversion to credit sales?
I know they've been contacted, and, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it's challenging. There's some people that are just challenging to convince them that it's to their benefit to sign this. I term it to them as kind of an insurance. It's an absolute free insurance policy. If something goes wrong, you got an insurance policy for 80%, is the way I turned it to them. You know, so it's no risk to them. It's all benefit. And I just, and then I have Sue talk to them, and it's still a struggle. So
like a Wendell Lund you talked to? And
I'm fairly certain we had, but I'm not 100% certain. Because there's three of us that are talking to these people. So, you know, I don't have time to call up all of them, so it wasn't like just me calling.
Okay, I wanted to ask you, on the tolling side, can you, well, first of all, do you recall an email from me in February? For more information about tolling processed grain that may or may not then have a bond liability with it, we had asked for more information about what types of things were coming in that perhaps were not subject to the license at all.
Okay. Rice.
Do you recall that?
I do recall
email.
That, yeah.
Okay, because we don't have an answer to that, but I think that perhaps this is the time for you to explain what other commodities are coming in
mm-hmm.
that you're doing further processing on that may not, that you think are processed sufficiently to not be considered under the license.
Okay. We process gluten-free, on the gluten side, spelt would be one of them. Spelt gets dehulled and cleaned before it gets to us. So there's a hull on the outside. You have to take it off. A farmer can't do that. It has to be processed by someone with the dehulling equipment to do it. And then on the gluten-free side of it, I'm not set up to clean out gluten-free grains so that there's no soy or wheat gluten within them. And I have to have them processed by another facility that does do that, and they consist of anywhere from a rice mill to cleaning facilities in Colorado or South Dakota where they can get any traces of gluten out of there. In the rice side, they also have to – I'm trying to think what they call it. It's kind of like barley. They have to pearl it is what I'm after. But sorghum, millet are two of them that have to be cleaned before I can even get it, and the farmer can't do it, and I can't do it. I'm not set up to do it. Then I've got Amaranth and Quinoa from South America and India. They have to wash on the quinoa. They have to wash it before I can process it as part of the system. And I just don't have the equipment at our facility to even begin doing some of the stuff that I need to do to the grains that the farmers can't do and I can't do.
So. You do understand that if you are ongoing business, we will need a specific, detailed, written description so that we have the correct records, so that during inspection we know how to differentiate between licensed grain and non-licensed grain that you are receiving. We need an answer to that email. Anything else? I don't think I have anything at the moment.
Okay, I'm going to, I guess I'll just go around the commissioners again one more time, and then, Mr. Hoberg, I'll give you an opportunity to close out your case. So, Commissioner Calk, do you have any additional
questions? No, Your Honor.
Mr. Fedorchik, Mr. Christman.
Thank you. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but are Roy Bruin or Roy Bruin Holdings or Rowland Seeds one or both of your potential investors?
Off the record.
That's okay then. Never mind. The second one is the question that was discussed about Farmers Union of Oil of Velva. Yeah. You bought that in early March, despite us having a cease and desist order in
February. I bought it before the cease and desist. I don't remember the date.
Okay.
I know I did. I know I have not bought any grain since the cease and desist. I don't remember the dates.
Okay, so it's probably late February. Good enough. That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
We will have a
witness. Mr. Hoberg, this was technically your presentation to your side of the case. I guess the question I have is, do you have anything else that you want to present for the record today?
No, I just really appreciate the commissioner's time. I was wanting to get down here and answer the questions and be on record so you feel comfortable with the answers and need your help. So thank you very much.
Well, we'll take a 5-minute break, and then the commission can decide if they have any other evidence they want to put into the formal hearing. So 5 minutes.
So we're off the record?
Off the record. 5 minutes. Well, let's make sure that
just wait.
Do we have an informal at 3 o'clock, too, Scott?
Correct.
Juan, are you presenting another case? Or?